With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Daily Premier League action and reaction. This is Football Social Daily.
A loose pass from Lingard and Manchester United beaten with the very last kick of the game in Switzerland last night. Ronaldo might have got things off to a cool start for the Reds, but things began to heat up after Wan-Bissaka's straight red card. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side down to 10 men for the majority, and they couldn't hold on to their lead as Young Boys picked up an historic win in the Champions League. Slightly more straightforward for Chelsea as they kicked off their defence of the trophy with a 1-0 win over Zenit St. Petersburg. Can you guess who scored the Blues goal? Of course, it was Romelu Lukaku. But how will Liverpool and Manchester City get on tonight as their respective European campaigns begin? A real nostalgic clash at Anfield tonight as AC Milan come to town, whilst RB Leipzig are in Manchester to face City at the Etihad. We'll have the rundown of Premier League interests in Europe right here on Football Social Daily today. And we'll be doing it in the company of Ian Brannan and Matt Pidd. Morning, boys.
Good morning.
Morning, Niall.
Good to have you both on. Good to talk about the Champions League again. It is back 108 days, Matt, or 109 days now after the Champions League final from last season. Have you recovered from that yet?
Yeah, just about, I think. It still hurts, though, when you talk about it.
Let's talk about Leipzig instead. We'll do that a little bit later. First, we'll start on the games that have already taken place. And Manchester United, who lost late on to Young Boys of Bern in their Champions League group stage opener last night. This was an early kickoff, but it didn't make much of a difference. It was on a plastic pitch over in Switzerland, a stadium called the Wankdorf, which has, I think, solar panels all over the roof. It's one of those progressive stadiums. And Young Boys put in an excellent performance. They won the game 2-1. Before we come on to the nuts and bolts of why Manchester United lost and the red card for Wan-Bissaka and all the other factors, Ian, do you think Young Boys probably deserve the win on the whole because they just didn't stop putting in a shift from minute one to minute 90?
Firstly, can I say that Googling this match for search terms in Twitter or whatever is an absolute nightmare. It's just, you've got to be so careful what you type in. Anyway, look, for me, Man United were overly complacent, I think. I'm not saying that they were trivial over this, but even the way that they're speaking afterwards of, oh, well, there's 4 or 5 more games to go, you know, they didn't seem to be properly up for it. They weren't treating it like some matches that they would. You know, there was certainly going to be far more fired up for other matches this season. Young Boys deserved the win, definitely, because they kept going. They kept going, they kept throwing everything at it. It was, you know, a late goal that decided it. And for me, Man United felt that they'd got the job done. You know, they'd got that goal up. Obviously, Ronaldo scored, and I think they just felt that they were cruising. And I don't know why, because young boys, you know, this is the Champions League. This side have qualified to get there. They've beaten other good teams.
Just the second time ever that they've been in the Champions League. So they're going to be bang up for it, aren't they?
Exactly. And so, you know, and quite rightly, this is the premier competition in Europe. Remember, it wasn't long ago that Man United were trying to ditch the Premier League to playing something like this week in, week out. And then they turn up and it's like, oh, well, you know, this will be an easy walk in the park. And they've been shown that it's not a walk in the park. There are no easy games in the Champions League. Anybody can beat anybody else. And I think for Man United to sort of, you know, the arrogance of Man United is back. And that is a bad thing for Man United because they need this reminder every now and again that they're not unbeatable. I think because they've got Ronaldo in the team now, they think they're just going to walk everything. And that's not the case, especially when you take Ronaldo off and swap him for Jesse Lingard, which works out well. So, yeah, you know, it's not, there's a long way to go in this competition. And because they got to the final of the Europa League and because they're doing well in the champion in the Premier League now and they've got Ronaldo in the team, they think they've got everything won. And, there's a lot of things to do, in this competition for them.
Well, you say there's a long way to go, and that was the thoughts of Harry Maguire and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer after the game. They both said in their post-match interviews that although it's a real stinger of a result and to lose in the way that they did really hurts, it isn't too much of a disaster because there are still five group games to go. Atalanta and Villarreal also in Manchester United's group. So I suppose you could say, Matt, that despite the glee I'm sure that was on your face come the full-time whistle, Manchester United fans will be gutted about this, but also it is early on. It's the first group game, so there are chances to get back on track.
Well, there's never a good game to lose, but if you're going to lose a game in your group stage of Champions League, usually getting out of the way the first game, that's usually the best one. But the other two teams they've got in the group there, they've got Villarreal and Atalanta, both quality sides. Obviously, United have a recent experience with Villarreal. You know, they lost to them in the Europa League final, albeit on penalties. But, you know, they've seen how good they were defensively. Atalanta are a scoring machine. Like in Serie A, like over the past couple of seasons under Gasperini, you know, they're like sort of like the opposite to what you'd expect from an Italian side. You know, they're this side that just free-flowing football. They love to go and score goals. And, you know, United, they've already lost one game now and they're going to have to be very careful because if they start dropping points, even getting draws here and there, you know, Villarreal and Atalanta both drew 1-1 last night, so they've both got a point on the board. Obviously, Young Boys have got 3 now. United have just got to be very, very careful, not get complacent. Obviously, like you said, it's early doors yet and they have got quality players and they still, for me, will probably qualify, but they've made it a little bit harder for themselves what they probably thought it would have been. They've got to go to some tough places and, you know, they've got to obviously keep players fit and, you know, other teams are going to pick up points around them. So, yeah, they're just going to have to just focus on themselves now, get this one out of the way and, you know, learn from the mistakes in this game against Young Boys.
The statistics make for grim reading for Manchester United fans. 2 shots in the entire game, the last of which came in the 25th minute, which was 10 minutes before Aaron Wan-Bissaka's red card. That is the lowest Manchester United shot tally of any game that Opta have on their statistic records since they started taking records of the Champions League in 2003-04. So that just goes
and
to
Young
show.
Young Boys had 19. Yeah. Young Boys had 19. They absolutely battered them. Just, like, they had a little bit more possession, but they absolutely battered them in terms of shots.
Absolutely. It just goes to show the difference in opinion when it comes to whether Manchester United were in control of the game or whether they weren't. And there are arguments for both because after the red card, things definitely changed. And, you know, that was Manchester United's first red card, straight red card in the Champions League since Nani got sent off in 2013 against Real Madrid. I think you'll remember when he brought it down out of the sky, but his studs ended up in a Real Madrid player's chest and the referee got the red card out. Sir Alex was fuming. Less complaints, I think, the manager of United, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, can have for this red card. Ian, I thought it looked pretty convincing. It was a poor touch from Wan-Bissaka and he left himself all the hard work to do to try and win the ball back and he's ended up committing a foul, which is probably worthy of a red card. I wonder what your take was.
Yeah, I saw the highlights of it last night and I only saw it the once, I think, but it did look like a fairly straightforward red card. I think, you know, we've had red cards even this week that maybe we'll mention later on that maybe are a little bit more questionable. But I think, you know, it seemed to be a fairly routine one. And I think as well, like, you know, the various pundits last night on the TV didn't particularly have a massive problem with it either, which I think tells you all you need to know really about that one. Bit of a sloppy chat. challenge, and that's going to come back and bite them potentially, because we're saying about these games and that are coming up, you know, Villarreal and Atalanta are no slouches, and missing a player like Wan-Bissaka in those games potentially might, not do them any favours in the long run.
Yeah, I think that red card, although people will look at it as a turning point in the game, it's the tactics that Solskjaer deployed after that that a lot of people are complaining about. He made a change. He brought Varane on, took Sancho off. Dalot came on as well. And there were a few system tweaks. They went to three at the back. And that is not typical Manchester United from what we know of what we've seen from them over the years, Matt. Often, even with 10 men, they'd quite like to impose themselves on the game. But they were quite content, I think, to hold on to that 1-0 lead, that the goal that Ronaldo got them. But they weren't able to do so. However, all of these question marks over Solskjaer, the fact that the game management was poor and the substitutions were terrible, do these things only really get amplified because of the fact that Jesse Lingard makes a horrific mistake at the end of the game? Because United did look on course for a point, despite the fact Young Boys, as you say, were all over them for a large part of the second half. Lingard makes an awful error where he passes the ball straight to a Young Boys player who's clean through on goal and finishes it off. So actually, can you legislate for those sorts of mistakes? It's a horrible moment for Lingard, and hopefully he, you know, recovers and comes back firing in the next few games just for his own confidence. But it's one of those things where you just have to hold your hands up and go, well, what can you do about that? You can do all the defending and coaching in the world, but if someone passes it straight to their player clean through, then there's not a lot you can do about that.
No, there's not a lot you can do about it at all. I mean, as much as I enjoyed seeing it, obviously, Solskjaer's not sent him on the pitch to do that. Solskjaer's sent him on the pitch to do a job. And obviously, like you said, you can't legislate for these types of things. They happen. It's a mistake, you know, and it's ultimately ended up costing Man United the game. But, you know, it's just something that you can't control. Any player can make a mistake on the pitch at any time. And obviously, it's like you said, it's amplified, you know, Solskjaer's tactics because of the result at the end of the day. And, you know, when you get a player sent off, you do have to adjust. You do have to maybe go a little bit more defensive because obviously you're a player down. But United's weaknesses for me in midfield, you know, they don't keep possession enough in midfield, and there's a lot of sloppy passes. And, you know, that's for me where they lost the game last night. If they control the ball in the midfield and just keep the possession and play things simple, you know, they win the game. But no, they didn't. They allowed Young Boys to ascend onto them and to take control of the game. And ultimately, yeah, that's where they lost it. But as for Lingard, you know, we know he's a decent player, and everyone's saying, oh, we're sending him back to West Ham and stuff like that. Like, look, you know, like, players make mistakes. It happens, you know. We've had the same with Nathan Ake over at Man City. You know, I'll get onto him later because we'll be talking about the City-Leipzig game. Just give these players a chance. We know the quality, and we know that they didn't mean to go out and do that. Obviously, it's frustrating, but no. At the end of the day, Solskjaer didn't send him out to do that. You know, it's just one of them things that you just can't control. It just happens on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Jesse Lingard, horrified. I don't think he really made a clean connection with the pass. I'm not sure he was really aware of his surroundings as well, but because he came on as a substitute, people point the finger at the manager and say, oh, well, you brought him on, it's your fault. And I just don't think that's particularly fair on Solskjaer. Although, it has to be said, United's Champions League record at the moment is looking pretty shaky, to say the least. They did take the lead early on in the game. Cristiano Ronaldo, again, as you've already mentioned, Ian. We can talk about Ronaldo's goal, squeezing it under the goalkeeper, the movement, tapping it home from close range. Still some work to do to get it under the keeper, in all fairness, but it was all about the delivery from Bruno Fernandes. What a brilliant pass with the outside of his boot, finding Ronaldo. And people often say, because of the way they've played together for Portugal, Bruno Fernandes sometimes shrinks in Cristiano Ronaldo's light. But if they can both play together at the peak of their powers at club level, and they can produce quality like that, that is a positive sign going forward for Manchester United, isn't it?
It's a positive sign for Manchester United, and it's a positive sign for Portugal as well, I think. If they have that duo firing at club level, and then they can translate that to the national team, that's surely got to be a bonus on that front as well. But yeah, they are playing really well. And you know, these are two of the top footballers in Europe, if not the world, playing together. And it's what you'd expect, you know, for that money that they've invested in those players. And I know that Ronaldo's price tag off the shelf, if you like, was cheap, but I'm sure his wages are not. There's a lot of money being invested there, and that's what you expect. You know, you've got two of the best there playing together and producing On the biggest stage, in Europe as well, which is what you want. And a great stat here. It's a long time since I've done a stat, but 68 Champions League appearances since turning 30. Cristiano Ronaldo scored 63 goals, which is 35 more than any other player has scored aged 30 or older in Champions League history. So he is an absolute machine, particularly at Champions League level. We've seen what he can do in the Premier League already, and he's performing on all fronts. And it's what you expect. It's what you want. It's what you get him there for. It's the reason that those players are in that team, and they're delivering. And brilliant to watch. And how clinical they are as well. I think there are plenty of players that would have received a pass from Bruno Fernandes and probably not taken that opportunity so well. We've just seen it looks so easy, these tap-ins, but how often do we see them go wide or go into the goalkeeper or hit the post? But whenever he gets that shot, Ronaldo, he doesn't miss.
His eyes cold, isn't it?
Yeah, eyes cold, dead eye, whatever you want to say. I think that was the 36th different opponent he scored against in the Champions League throughout his career. And he also matched Iker Casillas' record of the most Champions League appearances, 177. He's already got the record for the most goals. Now he's tied for the most appearances. He doesn't look like he's going to be slowing down anytime soon. Just finally, Matt, we saw some photos and footage from the stands of Ronaldo and Fernandes up in the dugout and in the technical area with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the game was drawing to a close and United were trying to cling on to that 1-1 draw. In the end, obviously, they got beaten with the last kick of the game. That isn't a good look, is it? And I know Fernandes and Ronaldo are two winners, absolutely passionate about Manchester United being successful. But when they're all up there in the dugout with the manager or up on the technical area near the touchline, that's a bit of a bad look, don't you think?
Well, yeah, because it's Solskjaer's job to manage the team, to coach the team. They're players. That's what they do on the pitch. You know what I mean? Obviously, we've seen it with Ronaldo in the past. I don't know if you remember the Euro 2016 final when Portugal playing France. I remember him barking orders on the touchline because he went off with an injury. And he was sort of like took over like what the manager was saying at the time. And I remember like when it first came through that he was signing him, I knew for a fact that he would have some sort of power in the dressing room. Like there was the story of no one eating apple crumble at his initiation and stuff like that. Like he seems to be rubbing off on the players already, and he is a big character, and he is one of these players that are gonna maybe have a little bit of a bit of power in the dressing room. And like you said, it doesn't look good on Solskjaer at all, because at the end of the day, Solskjaer's the manager. He should be the one making decisions. And Fernandes and Ronaldo, I mean, especially Fernandes. Fernandes hasn't really got a right to do that. Neither's Ronaldo. But the fact is that they're both sat there, both having their say on something that's nothing to do with them when they've just been out on the pitch and done their job anyway. Now, Solskjaer needs to nip that in the bud. He can't allow that to happen again, because they'll make him like a mug otherwise.
Yeah, certainly. It does raise a few questions. Manchester United, though, beaten last night in their Champions League group stage opener. What a famous win for David Wagner's Young Boys of Bern in Switzerland. They'll remember that victory for a long, long time.
Is it David Wagner? I didn't realise that.
Yeah, he had no glasses on. I didn't realise it either.
he's the gaffer. Wow. Yeah, and masterminding another victory over United, just like he did with Huddersfield, their first victory since the 50s as well, when he was the manager there.
They're the team that Huddersfield could have been, eh?
Well done to Young Boys. Manchester United did lose their opener. Chelsea didn't, though. They won against Zenit St. Petersburg. We'll talk about that match next here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back. Matt and Ian alongside me on today's Football Social Daily. And the Champions League is back. Time to talk Chelsea now, who beat Zenit St. Petersburg in their group opener, begun their defence of the Champions League title, which they won last season, by winning at Stamford Bridge, Romelu Lukaku with the goal against the Russians. He scores again, Romelu Lukaku. That's going to be a familiar sight this season, Matt. He is just an absolute unit, a goal machine. And since he's arrived back at Stamford Bridge for the second time, he just looks like a man so determined to be successful. Now, your club, Manchester City, didn't get a striker in the summer. Chelsea have done. They've splashed out £97.5 million later. They've got who they wanted, and that's Romelu Lukaku. It's already beginning to look like a shrewd investment, even at that high price.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen him at Inter Milan. He looks a completely different player to the one that left Man United. He's trimmed down. He looks a lot leaner now. He looks a lot quicker. He's playing with a smile on his face. And he just seems now to be the player that we all thought he was going to be. Even when he was a young kid coming through at Chelsea, and when he went to Everton, you know, he signed for Everton for 30 million, which obviously, even back then, you know, a lot of money. And we all knew he had potential. We all knew that he had this in him. But it was people questioning his first touch, his link-up play. He seems to have just put all that behind him now, and he just seems to be sort of like the complete striker. Everything you could want in a centre-forward. I mean, fantastic cross by Azpilicueta, but his movement and to find the space in the box and to just plant the header into the corner, you know, he's got everything. He can do absolutely everything at the moment. And you know, like you said, 97.5 million, a lot of money. But when I think about City not signing a striker in the summer, it's one of them things. Should we have, you know, maybe thrown our hand in there? Maybe we could have, you know, tempted him over. He's got a great partnership with Kevin De Bruyne for Belgium. I would have loved to have seen that with Man City, you know, but obviously, you know, things have happened. City haven't spent the money, Chelsea have, and Chelsea seems to be reaping the rewards of it at the moment. He's banging form, and there was no other player for me last night that was going to break the deadlock against a frustrating Zenit side. We know what Zenit are like. Zenit, especially away from home, like to set up defensively and like to frustrate. But yeah, Chelsea just even a little 1-0 victory, but look, you know, 1-0 is 1-0. It's 3 points on the board for them, and it's thoroughly deserved.
Yeah, it's a good point that, to be fair, it wasn't easy for Chelsea. But then again, why would it be, Ian? We've just discussed on the podcast the young boys' performance and how they made it so difficult for Manchester United. Coming up against the European champions for a side like Zenit St. Petersburg, these are big games. You can't just be blasé in the Champions League. The fans are back. It adds an extra dynamic to these matches. And, you know, why wouldn't Zenit want to come to Stamford Bridge and knock the champions off their perch? These are the sorts of games which seem easy on paper, but actually the opposition always make it far harder than it should be.
Yeah, you shouldn't underestimate what a big challenge this is going to be for the opposition, because, you know, as we mentioned, like the Young Boys match, Zenit, you know, these are the games that they want to be playing when they qualify for the Champions League. It's a big deal. You're playing the holders. Chelsea, who to compared to Zenit, are a team full of worldies, you know. And I think back to when in good old days, you know, when Leeds that time they qualified for the Champions League, and then they got in this group and they were drawn against Barcelona and AC Milan and Deportivo La Coruña and all these world class names that came along. You know, it was a massive deal, and it still is a massive deal now. You know, I know that, you know, Leeds obviously overperformed and got to the semi-final and all that kind of stuff. But it was a fantastic occasion to play against these sides that previously you'd never got anywhere near. And so it's the same for Zenit. It's the same for Young Boys. You know, having Man United come into your ground or going on an away trip, the excitement of that, obviously it's different with travel and stuff at the minute, but going on an away trip to Chelsea for their fans must be an amazing thing if any of them were able to make the trip. And so, yeah, of course they're going to be up for it. And you shouldn't be, if you're a Chelsea fan or a Man United fan, lose sight of what a big deal it is to play against these world-renowned names and world-class players. It's for some of these players, they will never get this opportunity again to play against Lukaku or any of the other household names that they have in the Chelsea team. And same for the Young Boys. You know, the Young Boys players, when are they, apart from the return leg, when are they going to get to play against Cristiano Ronaldo again? You know, it's that kind of thing that fires them up, and they will dine out on this for their lives.
About that, Ian,
exactly.
Won't they?
You know, there are sportsmen who will talk about that for the rest of their life. And you know, the kid who scored the goal, the winning goal against Man United, doesn't matter what happens now in Young Boys' Champions League performance, the campaign this year. Doesn't matter, because he's done that, and he will live off that forever. If nothing ever happens in his career again, that's him made. Yeah. Do you know?
And it's, yeah, he won't need to buy a beer in Bern again anytime soon, will he?
No, exactly. And it's one of those things that you should not underestimate. We obviously, I think we focus here and we're looking down the list of Liverpool versus AC Milan. That's a different kettle of fish. But when you're talking about these sort of smaller teams that have made it into the Champions League, don't underestimate what a big deal it is for them. And so, yeah, they're going to be fired up, and you should never think that it's going to be a walk in the park, because they see it as otherwise. They're there just to get in your way. They're there to have that experience that they can dine out on for the rest of their lives. And a performance, of course, for some players, a great performance really gets them on the radar of other clubs as well. You know, it's so much riding on it. You can't just say, well, it's not like playing FIFA where you go, there's a good team, there's a bad team. Who's going to win? Football's more than that. And that's why it's unpredictable. That's why you should never bet on football, kids. Oh, no, I can't really say that. Are we sponsored by them anymore?
Don't think so. I think you're clear for the time being. You're in a good little window there, I think.
Okay, yeah, okay. Do it responsibly.
Yes, absolutely. 18+, begamblerware.org. Don't forget as well, you mentioned earlier, Matt, about Lukaku. The ball for Lukaku's header from Azpilicueta was absolutely brilliant. It must give teams confidence, especially Chelsea fans' confidence, knowing that if the ball into the box is right, you have got someone with the quality to put the chances away. And even if the chances are few and far between, with someone like Lukaku, if you get it right, he will deliver the goods for you. That must give fans supreme confidence. There are a few players like that knocking around, but certainly it was a great delivery into the box and well finished.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all well and good having the striker in the box that can finish. You've got to also have the service out wide that's going to, you know, that's going to provide that for the strikers. Azpilicueta's done that for years. You know what I mean? He's ageless. Azpilicueta. You know, I think they call him Dave over at Chelsea, which I find hilarious actually. But yeah, he's done that for years, and you know, Lukaku, he'll know that. He trains with him on a daily basis, and they'll work on that. Tuchel have him working on that now because they've got a massive advantage now with Lukaku. You know, Tuchel's got a solid defensive setup. You know, we've seen how pragmatic they are, Chelsea, but now they've got this extra dimension which they didn't really have much last season. You know, they relied on the balls in behind last season really, and build up play through the midfield. But now they've got this where they can just play it out wide and get either Chilwell on the left or Azpilicueta on the right to swing it into the box and have Lukaku sat there waiting in the middle, whether it's a header, whether he's just poking it in with his studs or whatever. You know, it's a massive advantage, and this is the only thing that I worry about this season. I know I've been on the podcast before and said we'll be fine without a striker, but I think back to the days when we had like an Edin Dzeko, you know, where we had that little bit of a plan B sort of thing where we could swing it into the box and he'd be on the end of a cross. You know, our play can sometimes, you know, I mean, our football's absolutely fantastic, and you know, it's the best I've ever seen from my standpoint as a City fan. But sometimes it can maybe a little bit predictable, and teams can set up against you, and it's going to just give teams a little bit of a harder time against Chelsea because they won't know what's coming. They won't know if they're going to be playing it through the middle. They won't know if it's going out wide. They're just going to have to be careful, because now they've got an extra dimension at Chelsea.
Yeah, definitely think that, you know, Chelsea have got that weapon now in Romelu Lukaku. They've also got Juventus in their group. Do you think Chelsea should be fearful, Ian? They've got their first 3 points under their belt in the group stage. They are the defending champions. Juventus haven't exactly started Serie A particularly well. Lost to Napoli at the weekend, languishing down in 16th in the Italian league after just 3 games. But they are obviously a club with huge European pedigree, so Chelsea can't take their eye off the ball. But do you think that they are the ones to beat now? If you're putting the two sides side by side, obviously Juventus have lost their ace in the pack in Cristiano Ronaldo. Things aren't going to plan there. Chelsea can feel confident that they are the best team in the group, but, you know, with a side like Juventus, it's always going to be tough. So do you think that Chelsea should still be slightly wary of them?
Yeah, be wary of them, but the top two are going to go through from the group, so you can't really see that Chelsea and Juventus are not going to qualify from that group when Zenit and Malmo are the other two teams. You know, it's not a group of death. I think there is a clear, you know, two clear winners that are going to progress. And then, yeah, I just can't see how Chelsea are not going to qualify for the next round, which is what it's about at this stage anyway. And I know it's going to affect maybe who you're going to play in the next thing, but just getting through to the next round is what's important, isn't it? And I can't see Chelsea or Juventus not qualifying from that group. I think there's no real group of death this year, is there? Maybe Group A is probably the trickiest, which, well, Group A or Group B, actually, with Bruges, Man City, PSG and Leipzig is, you know, pretty tight. And we're going to come on to that in a moment. And maybe Group B with Atletico, AC Milan and Liverpool and Porto. That's probably that's the trickiest one to work out, I would think, actually, looking at it. But Group H with Juventus, Chelsea, Zenit and Malmo, I think, yeah. I don't fear for anybody in that group, apart from Malmo.
I'm sure they'll give it their all, just like we were discussing about the likes of Zenit and Young Boys. Malmo, of course, won't be there to roll over. Incidentally, a player who started his career at Malmo could be in action tonight at Anfield, and that man is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He will visit Anfield with AC Milan to take on Jurgen Klopp's side in what is a classic European tie. The 2005 Champions League final, in which Liverpool came from behind. They were 3-0 down against a star-studded Milan side. They ended up winning the game on penalties thanks to the heroics of goalkeeper Jerzy Dudek and, during the full 90 minutes, Steven Gerrard, a game that defined him as a player and certainly his career, in my opinion. 2 years later, they met again, 2007. This time AC Milan came out on top. It certainly does have all the ingredients, Matt, to be a really exciting game tonight. But there's always the danger, isn't there, when you think back to those amazing games, that you kind of overhype this one. It doesn't quite feel like this one is really being hyped up hugely, but it's certainly an exciting one for the neutral nonetheless.
Yeah, that 2007 final was the Inzaghi final. I loved Inzaghi as a centre-forward. He was brilliant.
He scored against Pompey in the 92nd.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Was that when Ronaldinho scored that free kick?
Yeah, I remember absolutely that. Killed me, that
oh,
did.
But it did. But yeah, good memories still there. Yeah, still, they great still get to get Milan over to Fratton Park. That's got to be some good memories, that anyway. But yeah, going on to the game now. It's with it being a group stage game, obviously that takes the shine off it. There's not much really riding on it. It's the first game in a group. You know, it's two really, you know, historical European great sides nonetheless. Milan in decent form. They've won the first three games of the season. Like you said about Ibrahimovic. You know, he scored over the weekend. It was a tap-in, but, you know, it was against Lazio, who were a decent side. He seems to get better with age. He's like Benjamin Button, and he doesn't get older. He just seems to get younger. He's got this arrogant, cocky nature. He knows how good he is, you know, and that's worked for him his whole career. He's been absolutely fantastic. But, you know, Milan, you know, they've got other decent players. They've got Rebic, they've got Theo Hernandez, you know, the left back who City have linked with at the moment. Pep Guardiola seems to be a big admirer of him. They've got Brahim Diaz, who, of course, was a Man City player at one point. He went to Real Madrid from us and then went to Milan from Real Madrid. They've got some decent players there in Liverpool, banging form. You know, obviously, they lost Harvey Elliott over the weekend, which is he's a young lad. He's just worked his way into the side. It's not a huge loss for them, I'd say. You know, there was worse players that could have been injured. No disrespect to Harvey Elliott, by the way. You know, obviously, I wish him a speedy recovery, and he seems to be a good young talent. Liverpool at the moment, with their first 11, you know, if they stay injury free this season, they're going to be up there in the Premier League. They're also going to be up there in the Champions League. Mo Salah, you know, they've got the other player. You've got Mane up front. You know, world-class players on their night that can destroy teams, not just hurt teams, absolutely destroy teams. And you've got Diego Jota as well, who's a world-class player in my view. He looks really at home in this Liverpool side. It's going to be a good game. It's going to be a good one for the neutral to watch. Obviously, I'll be having eyes elsewhere, and I'll probably just watch the highlights afterwards. But I'm hoping for a free-scoring game. I can't see it being that way. I can see it being you know, quite tight. You know, no team's going to want to lose the first game, but with it being at Anfield, European nights back there, you know, the crowd are back in there. The atmosphere is going to be brilliant for the first 5 minutes, then it's going to turn into a library. No, I'm joking. European nights at Anfield are different to league games. I'll give them that. It's going to be a difficult game for both sides, but I can see Liverpool just edging it.
What do you think Liverpool's focus will be this season, Ian? Because I think they've actually gone under the radar a little bit when it comes to the Premier League in terms of the title race. A lot of times we've spoken about Chelsea on the show. They've added Lukaku. Thomas Tuchel has come in and done an amazing job, won them the Champions League, got them into the top four. Manchester City, obviously defending champions, are always going to be in and amongst it. United have now got Ronaldo and have had a really good summer window. Liverpool haven't added any players over the summer, but they're still 1-11, a really good football side and will probably be up there and possibly challenging for the title, if not winning it. I wouldn't be surprised if they went on and won it. Let's just say that. But they do have this love affair with the Champions League. Six-time winners. They know how to get the job done. A couple of finals in recent years under Klopp as well. What do you think their priority, their focus will be this season? Why not go for both? It's tough, but I mean, they've got the quality to do it.
Yeah, they've absolutely got the quality to do it. I think Liverpool always compete on all levels, don't they? They're not really a side who are renowned for, you know, saying they're not going to compete on in certain cups or much like that. They usually do throw everything at it, certainly at this stage of the season. And then as things progress, sometimes, you know, you can see they've got a better chance of doing well in the Champions League or the league. And you can see where they might prioritise a little bit. But I think for Liverpool, surely the Premier League and the Champions League are on a fairly even footing. The Champions League, obviously, a very different competition in terms of how intense the games are. But I think back to my illustrious days working with the great Emlyn Hughes, and which there are many tales. But he was a European Cup winning captain for Liverpool, and he always had a bit of a preference for Europe. You know, the European nights and the European competition, because as I remember, he always used to say that, you know, there you're playing against the best. You know, you're playing, certainly when it was the European Cup in his day, if you want to go back to that, you know, it was the champions, wasn't it? You had to be like the very best from each nation.
The actual Champions League, weren't it?
Yeah, exactly. Ironically, when it wasn't called the Champions League, it had more champions in it. But you're pitting yourself against the Real Madrid or AC Milan. Obviously, that's a match tonight, we know that. But and it was a knockout thing as well. There was more on it. And he always used to say that, you know, if you've won that competition, if you're a European Cup winner, you've proved yourself against the best. Whereas if you're a Premier League winner, yeah, it's all about stamina. It's more of a marathon. But you've gone through that competition where you can afford to lose. You know, you can afford to get beat by Watford or whatever. And it doesn't really matter. Whereas, you know, you lose against Young Boys, for example, in Man United's case, and that could actually have more on it in a few weeks' time from now. We don't know yet. And yeah, I think there is probably a preference of that European champion thing being a bigger thing now that Liverpool have won the Premier League recently and they've done it and they've ticked that box. I think, yeah, maybe the focus would be on Europe now, because that was the thing that's hanging over them, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they want their title back, though, don't they? They want that Premier League title back after.
Yeah, but the thing with Liverpool
has
always been they've never won it. It's always been that you can't win it, you never won it, you're not good enough to win it, and all this kind of stuff. They've done it recently. And
never got a parade, though, did they?
Exactly. Well, yeah. Well, not officially.
They need to win it again just to get that parade.
There would be that. I think it's too early in the season. I think they're gonna. Of course, they want to win both. But you know, we'll have to see how things pan out in the respective competitions, and if they can compete on both fronts. We know that Liverpool like a treble, you know, quadruple, whatever. They would be well up for that, I'm sure. So I don't think it's a thing that they're going to prefer over each other, but I think obviously it might be out of their hands in which they end up competing in. But at this stage of the season, they want to win as much as possible. Surely that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I probably shouldn't say this, seeing as we're a Premier League podcast here on Football Social Daily, but there is something magical about the Champions League. There's something a little bit extra special about the fact that there is teams coming over from Europe to play at, you know, the Etihad or Anfield, for example, or Old Trafford or Stamford Bridge or wherever it may be. And just that Champions League final occasion where the fans all converge on one city. I know times have been different in recent years due to the pandemic, but, you know, people always talk about that night in Istanbul if you're a Liverpool fan, or, you know, United fans talk about Moscow, and Chelsea fans will talk about Munich. And you know, that those are always kind of occasions which get the cheeks rosy and you're kind of really looking forward to the action. And just, I think there's something special, there's a bit of magic about the Champions League, even down to as far as the music that gets played before the teams walk out. You know, that's like spine tingling, that piece of music.
Yeah, it gets the hairs on your neck standing up, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Zadok the Priest is the anthem that it is, which a lot of people don't know, by the way.
Right?
Yeah,
a lot that's of, a great pub quiz.
A lot of people don't
knowledge.
Know that that is the coronation anthem. So when the Queen hands over the crown to Prince Charles, the Champions League music will be playing when Prince Charles has the crown put on his head, because that is the coronation music for the British monarchy. So a lot of people will be finding that amusing, I'm sure, when that day eventually comes. But something special about the Champions League for me, for
Prince
sure.
Prince Charles winking into the camera as it goes past him.
Yeah, with his hand stood behind his back looking away. At
yeah,
the...
that's it. Yeah.
Mascot beneath him as well. Anyway, enough joking around. Liverpool against AC Milan tonight. Looking forward to that one. Also, Manchester City in action this evening at the Etihad. They welcome German opponents, and we'll talk about that next here on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Welcome back. Football Social Daily from Sports Social. Niall McCorn here alongside Ian Brannan and Matt Pidd. And time to talk about Manchester City, a club Matt loves and adores. Is this the year City finally win the Champions League? Because after last season where you got to the final and you were beaten by Chelsea, and maybe it was one of those classic Pep overthinking moments, you've also been knocked out in heartbreaking circumstances against Tottenham in recent seasons. Can you finally do it this season, or are you again going into this campaign with a slightly bated breath, mate?
It's deja vu every September. Every September we talk about it, don't we? Closest we've ever been last season. Obviously, it's our first ever European final, and you know, we sort of went out with a whimper rather than a bang. You know, it's not a final that many people are going to remember, other than maybe obviously Chelsea fans. It's one of these things. The fans, obviously, we've been in it for like over 10 years now, and there's still this sort of disdain that our fan base has with the Champions League. You speak to any of our fans really that have been supporting the club for a number of years, and they always put the Premier League above the Champions League. Now, I love the Premier League, don't get me wrong, but I think for us to be called, so-called, I say this with inverted commas, elite, we need to win this competition. The owners want this competition. Pep will probably feel that to be vindicated as one of the all-time great managers, he needs to win it again with another club without Leo Messi, which people still keep going on about to this day, even though he's already came over to England, dominated domestically and changed the way the football's played over here probably forever. You know, he's still got this thing where he needs to win the Champions League with an English side, Man City, and to get this monkey off his back. And We're going to be going into it, obviously, still wanting to win it. This is why we build the squad we do. We want to win every single competition we play in. Pep is a serial winner. He wants to win every single competition he plays in. We talked about the Carabao Cup a few weeks ago on the podcast. He loves to win that. He wants to win the FA Cup. He wants to win the Premier League. He wants to win the Champions League. And, you know, these games against teams like Leipzig, first game in a group, we need to get them out of the way. Leipzig, you know, they're not the team that they once were. You know, they've had three of the probably best assets taken off them by Bayern, you know, cherry-picking again. They've had Nagelsmann, they've had Upamecano, and they've had Sabitzer taken from them. But they've still got decent players. You know, they've got Kevin Campbell and Andre Silva that can still hurt you on the night if you allow them to. So we've just got to be very, very cautious tonight. We've got no Stones, no Laporte. So Ake's going to come in. He took a lot of criticism after the Charity Shield against Leicester. He needs to come in tonight and put in a decent performance. He's a decent player, Ake. We signed him for 40 million. You know, I don't spend 40 million on a player if he's no good. He's just been, he's had injuries. He's been in and out the side. You know, with City, there's rotation, and he's got to expect that. City, I have no issues with other than the slip up against Tottenham on the first game of the season. We've scored 11 and conceded one, so we can't really complain there. Bernardo Silva, we've kept hold of him. He looks like a player rejuvenated. He looks like the 2018-19 Bernardo Silva, where he was our player of the season for me. Jack Grealish making his Champions League debut is going to want to make an impression on his first night.
Why he moved to City, isn't it, Matt?
That was it.
To be part of Champions League night.
Absolutely, and you know, who can blame him? You know, he's got the world at his feet. I'm not saying he's better than Villa or anything like that. Maybe he's just got ambitions that are bigger than what Villa can offer him at the moment. This was it. This was the reason why he left. This was the reason why they put 100 million, you know, release clause on him, because they didn't think that anyone would come in. But obviously City have seen potential with him. And what I've seen with Jack Grealish so far, what Pep's got him doing, he's working on and off the ball. He's got him tracking back and making tackles. And this is what Pep wants in a player. He's got the quality on the ball, but he's also got the work ethic off the ball. I mean, he made a great tackle against Jamie Vardy over weekend, which stopped a counter-attack, which I thought was absolutely fantastic. And he didn't get enough credit for that for me. But yeah, Leipzig, no mugs. We spoke about Young Boys. We spoke about Zenit. They're not here just to make up the numbers. Leipzig have been fantastic in the Bundesliga since they came into it. You know, they've had like top two finishes, and they're up there with some of the most dangerous teams in Europe. Obviously, they've lost three big assets, like I mentioned, but I don't think we should take them lightly tonight. We've got a couple of injury problems there, but we've got Foden and De Bruyne that have returned to the side. You know, they're not in the first 11. They'll probably start on the bench, but, you know, having them back in the side is a massive plus. I think we just need to get off to a good start tonight, get the crowd going, get a couple of goals nice and early, if possible, if Leipzig allow us to. And just get a good feeling back again, because it's coming back off us losing a Champions League final. There's still that bitter taste in the mouth. You know, when the Champions League bit came on at the beginning of the broadcast last night, and you see Chelsea lifting it at the end, you know, it's still like, it still hurts. Because
sickener.
Yeah, it's a sickener, absolutely. But we need to use that now. We need to use that feeling, that sickness feeling. We need to use that as motivation. We don't want to feel that again. We want to go one better this season, and we want to go and win it. And we want to do it in style as well. We want to do it, and we want to do it in the way that Pep Guardiola has got us playing.
Yeah, Manchester City kick off their Champions League campaign tonight at the Etihad against Leipzig, a team who did beat United in the Champions League last season. And they are quite a tactical side. I'll be interested to see how that one unfolds. Before we finish today's Football Social Daily, I wanted to talk about refereeing, because it's just been revealed this morning whilst we're recording the show that Pascal Struyck, his red card for Leeds United, has been upheld after his challenge on Liverpool's Harvey Elliott, which resulted in Elliott fracturing his lower leg and his ankle. Wishing him a speedy recovery, as we've already touched upon on today's show. And it's just one of a number of refereeing incidents which have popped up this season, and I don't think they ever will go away. I think they're always going to have questions of referees, because that's just the nature of the game that we all love and enjoy. We've had a question here from a listener to Football Social Daily called Sanj, and he says, should Premier League referees be hired from other leagues to improve the collective quality of the officiating? He then goes on to say Stuart Atwell's performance against Aston Villa was an inconsistent disgrace, and he's just one of many. The top league deserves better. I love how he said Stuart Atwell's performance against Villa, as if he was like completely on the other Villa side rather than a neutral referee. Yeah, I love that. It's an interesting point, though, because we saw last night in the Champions League English referee Anthony Taylor, Ian, send a player off for a second yellow when he hadn't even booked him with a first yellow. So it's not the first time we've seen English referees making errors. He also says, Sanj, and I think just to kind of reinforce his point, that foreign managers and players have come over to these shores and transformed the Premier League and made it this global entity. Why are we so reluctant to have referees from other nations coming over and trying their hand? If they're the best at what they do, surely they should be over here refereeing our league, shouldn't they?
It's not a bad point. I don't know. It does seem like, you know, that football has progressed. And I think this can be said for many sports, actually, whatever they are, whether it's tennis or cricket or Formula One or Speedway or whatever it is, that whilst to fans, to those actually playing it week in, week out, the sport can do what it wants, you know, in terms of developing and being more progressive and whatever. Sometimes the people at the very top of the sport who are, you know, looking after the rules and implementing the rules can be a little bit, you know, maybe detached from the passion of the moment, from and even the reality of playing the game. Some of which I imagine there'll be people who are at the Football Association right at the very top who've never played professional football. Maybe you never even played football, full stop.
That's crazy.
Who knows?
That's crazy. These people in charge of our game as well. That's crazy.
Exactly. And so they there are things that happen in a game, you know, accidents happen, and certainly in the case of the Strauch thing with Leeds, you know, nobody has ever said that this was a challenge that was designed or went in was reckless. You know, he got the ball, he actually got the ball cleanly. What happened was it was the trailing leg that tripped up over each other, and that's what caused the injury. Now, he got sent off for causing harm to the player. And but it's one of these things where, you know, since when did he get sent off? It's a very recent thing that getting sent off for, you know, accidents have always happened in football. Unfortunate, but they do. You know, there's all sorts of things that can happen. It just seems that why does somebody have to pay a price for these things? If he'd gone in with studs up and went to clean him out, then absolutely throw the book at him. But even you know, even the Liverpool player concerned has put on Instagram that, look, absolutely, there was absolutely nothing wrong with the challenge. The challenge was fine. It was an accident. It was one of those things. And, you know, everybody's wishing each other well.
He's even got Harvey Elliott's even apologised on Stuart's behalf. He's even apologised. And that should say it all, really. Look, he's been sent off for the result of the challenge and not the challenge itself. So how is that right? Because, like you said, accidents happen. It's a contact sport. It's just one of them things that's unfortunate. It's a freak incident. He's not gone in, like you said, reckless. He's not gone in with any intent. He's gone in to win the ball, and it's just the result of, you know, a trailing leg afterwards. That's it. And, you know, players are getting punished for accidents that's not their fault. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, and I can understand at the time in the heat of the moment, right, I can understand the referee on the pitch giving the red card because, you know, they haven't got time to sort of go into it all and all this kind of stuff. He's got to deal with what he can see. And what you can see is a player with a broken leg. And, you know, fair enough. All right, I think we can get over that. But a few days later, having investigated it, having seen the evidence on the screen, having seen the evidence from the players concerned about how it was an accident and one of these things, to then punish a player for a reckless incident when everybody involved, even the kid with a broken leg, is saying it wasn't a reckless incident, what's the point? You know, what's the point having an appeal when clearly they haven't listened to anything that's been said by anybody? It's just, what is the point? And for Leeds fans, it comes down to, well, you know, no surprise. You know, when has the FA ever stood up for Leeds?
Well, to play devil's advocate here, it doesn't really matter what Harvey Elliott says, whether he's broken his leg or not, because he's not the referee. And I know that's a very, you know, plain way of putting it and quite blunt, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because the referee, it's his call and it's an objective game. And that's the problem I think we've got with trying to introduce things like technology into football, is that it all comes down to, in the referee's opinion, is it a red card? And that referee on the day seemed to think that it was. And VAR, he went and had a look and decided that it was a red card. And whoever the assessor is has also decided that it's a red card. Now, it doesn't matter if 100 people look at it and 97 of them say it's not a red. If the three people that are important say that it is, then they're the ones that make the decision. So fundamentally, I mean, it's frustrating, but it's just something that I can't see changing, to be honest.
By that token then, I mean, this is obviously a physical injury, a broken leg, or certainly a dislocated ankle. But he's, you know, the ligaments are affected and all this kind of thing. So it's going to be quite a long recovery for him. Fair enough, right? So it is a big.
He's got age on his side, luckily enough.
Yeah, he has. But if he hadn't have broken his leg, and it was a ligament injury, would that still be a sending off? You know, we're punishing somebody here for accidentally causing an injury. And yes, it's dramatic because there is a bone break, but where do you draw the line for being sent off? What if he'd done something and he'd twisted and snapped his ligaments in his knee? You know, is that the Leeds player's fault? It's the same thing. It just happens to be a break. And I think because it's a dramatic thing that happened in terms that it is a break, but medically speaking, where is the line between, you know, somebody being causing an injury that gets you sent off?
I'll use an example here. Pickford on Van Dijk last season. Did Pickford get sent off?
Exactly.
He put Van Dijk out for the season, did his ACL, but he didn't get sent off because it wasn't a break.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like you said, what's the difference then?
Injury. Yeah, it's an injury. It is a severe injury. Probably that you know, an ACL is worse than breaking your ankle, I think. But because it's dramatic, because, you know, that's the thing. And I think the referees made a situation here and gone, oh, man, and panicked like everybody else did when they saw it on the TV. But because you can't see an injury, players are not going to get sent off. And it just seems to be like, well, It wasn't purposeful. It wasn't a studs up challenge. He didn't go in to snap his leg. They just tripped up over each other. And this is going to happen through the course of the season. There will be another player, maybe this week, maybe next month, who'll catch a player or catch their studs in the ground, and have an injury that'll see them out for 6 months or more. You know, and
could have happened with Wan-Bissaka easily last night.
It could happen in any game. And I think here you just
But the margins are so fine, aren't they? This is elite sport. Like a millisecond can
what
result in you winning the ball or hurting someone.
What it's saying is that you can't. They're making it a no contact sport, effectively, because even if you get the ball, which is what it's all about, you know, it was always with free kicks and with you know, tackles and so on. It was always, well, you know, if you get the ball. That was always the thing, wasn't it? And now he's got
hard but fair.
And but now the player got the ball cleanly, and what caused the injury was the aftermath, if you like, of legs being everywhere and getting tangled. I don't know. It just sets a precedent that is going to be inconsistently applied elsewhere in the season. That's what it's about. And I think, we want in football. Whoever you support, whoever your team is, all we want is the rules to be applied consistently, week in, week out. And this is going to come back through the course of the season now, because this sort of incident will happen again, where a player gets injured through no fault of anybody. Look, stuff's going to happen, right? It is a sport. People will get injured, unfortunately, through no fault of their own. And will this same punishment be dished out equally to other players from other clubs? Probably not through the course of the season. And, you know, we've got all this technology now. We've got all these cameras everywhere and all this kind of stuff. And yet still stupid mistakes are being made, you know, basic mistakes. And yet we're very, very good at analysing whether somebody is offside by a millimetre. We can do that, but we can't spot that the referee hasn't actually given somebody a yellow card yet. You know, it's like we're focusing on the minutiae and getting really hot up on that, but then there's so much other stuff that we're just haven't got a grip of. I don't know. It's just inconsistent, isn't it? That's what it is.
It's a great question raised by Sanji as well, and certainly one that we all debate, I'm sure, throughout the rest of the season at some point here on Football Social Daily. Good debate, good chat. Great to have you on. Thanks very much, Matt. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate your company as ever. Don't forget, tomorrow you'll be able to listen to a full rundown as well of all of the results from the Champions League and exactly how Liverpool and Manchester City got on kicking off their Champions League campaigns. Also, the Europa League returns tomorrow, so we'll have discussion on that too. But that's it for today's episode of Football Social Daily, and we'll catch you again next time.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.